Yeah. the schedule.
You can sit up here and say if you
want.
Huh? Want me to announce it? Okay. So, Varshana Maharaj is going to say a few words now. Over here.
I think this is an appropriate day for you up here. Very appropriate. Because Srila Prabhupada said that Lord Balaram is Yadi Guru. But he also said that he might be Yadi Guru. As Krishna Das Kaviraj, the Swami recounts a wonderful Leela in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Oh, my dear friend Vrinda, from where are you coming? I'm coming from Radhakund. No, I'm coming from the lotus feet of Sri Hari. Where is he? At Radhakund. What's he doing? He's learning dancing. Who's his guru? Your image, Radhika, revealing herself in every tree and every creeper and flower in every direction. He's roaming around like a dancing actor, making Krishna dance behind him. He's the guru of Krishna. But because Krishna is, in one sense, in a superior position, although the Gaudiya Vaishnavas don't see it that way, Krishna was perplexed in how to fulfill his desire of breaking her mind for divine outing and mood. He tried different strategies, but they failed. He kept going back to Lalita, and she gave him various strategies. So one time she said, you should approach Radha as a barber's daughter and offer to do Charna Seva. So Lalita dressed Krishna as a barber's daughter and equipped him with his little box of paraphernalia for cutting nails and cutting, grooming hair and painting designs on hands and feet, whatever barber's daughters do. And then Krishna came to Javad, to Abhimanyu's house, and presented himself to the Sakis, said, I've come to do some seva. And he said, well, we'll ask Srimati, but what's your name? He said, my name is Naveen Sakhi. Naveen just means new. I'm a new Sakhi around here. Naveen Sakhi. So they said, they went to Srimati. She's sitting on the bejeweled throne. She said, there's a Naveen Sakhi who wants to do some service. He said, okay, I'll bring her. They brought her in. Naveen Sakhi bowed down and asked, what services would you like? And Srimati said, well, you can decorate my feet. So Naveen Sakhi took out his paraphernalia and started decorating Radha's feet. And while he was doing so, he was thinking, now my desires are all fulfilled. I've attained service to the lotus feet of Radhika, and it appears that her mind is dispersing. So he was very elated. And in his elated state of consciousness, he began becoming more creative in his conception. And he was thinking that I'm in a situation now where I can place myself eternally at her lotus feet. And then a verse drifted into his mind from the Padma Purana. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purnashura Nitya Mukta Vinitam Nami Namina. Krishna said, yes, that's right. I'm not different from my holy name. So in my name, form, I can reside here. So he began painting Shyam on her lotus feet as he was decorating. Shyam, Shyam, Shyam. And then Srimati was looking. What's she doing? It looks like she's writing her name, Shyama. Look, no, she's not writing Shyama. She's writing Shyam. What are you doing? Put Krishna's name on my feet. But Krishna, he was so oblivious to what was going on at the time. His heart was dancing and his mind was racing, and he was so just oblivious to what was going on around him. He didn't realize that he was being chastised. And then he got so excited, he started to make a mess. You know, his beautiful handwriting, writing Shyam, he just started trembling and making a mess. And Srimati said, what are you doing? Look, you're making a mess. And she kicked him right in the chest. And her beautiful pinkish lotus feet on the sapphire chest of Naveen Sakhi made a more beautiful decoration than Bhrigu's lotus feet in the chest. Instruction about the relationship between the name and the named for us to incorporate in our chanting. Because every day we have the opportunity to celebrate the appearance of Radha and Krishna. And we should approach the Maha Mantra in that mood of reverence, that these are our deities, Radha and Krishna, in the sound of their names. And Srila Prabhupada said we should cry out to Krishna like a child calling for mother. Mother Haras. We're discussing later this morning why and how Srimati is addressed and conceived as mother, because she nurtures our infant Krishna consciousness. And not only for the devotees of Braj, for devotees anywhere, of any avatar, wherever there is bhakti, that is Srimati's energy. And she is serving her children like a mother, children being the jivas, trying to conceive infant Krishna within our hearts. But what do we know about Krishna consciousness, especially here in the West? So Srimati is addressed like a mother. And Srila Prabhupada gave us that prayer. Oh, Mother Hara, please engage us in the service of Krishna. And you know how in Jaipur there was that controversy? The other sampradayas were saying that these gaudiyas, their worship is bogus. They're treating Srimati on a level equal or greater than Krishna. But it's just that, you know, Radha is just some heavenly damsel. And we put her on the altar with Krishna and worship her. So by the king ordered that Radha be taken away. And the Vaishnavas were in such distress. So they approached Baldev Vidibhushana and he said, well, she's just angry at Krishna. She'll be back, so don't take it too seriously. And then Govinda spoke as Govinda Vasya, and it resolved the whole controversy. Today is also the appearance day of Vishakha, through the same time, almost in a nearby village. Vishakha. So, anyway, Srila Prabhupada explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita how Jiva Goswami wanted to defend the relationship of Krishna with the gopis by explaining how they were married. And it's not that this is anything new, because It actually refers to when Krishna returned to Vrindavan from Dwarka, you know, just after he killed Shalva, who is the demon personifying the deceptive aspects of technological secrets. So Krishna killed that demon. And just outside Dwarka, and when he was just ready to re-enter Dwarka, Narada Muni arrived on the battle scene with a message from Dantavatra to challenge Krishna to fight with him at Mathura. But Dantavatra was thinking, I don't want to challenge Krishna around Dwarka because he'll have all those Kshatriyas to support him. Kshatriyas already left Mathura, so if I invite him back there, he won't have any support. I can kill him easily. But Krishna was thinking, if I go meet Dantavatra at Mathura, I'll be right next to Vrindavan, there's no home. So I said, yes, I accept. And then he told Dharuka, let's go. So they harnessed the horses and took off for Mathura, where he confronted Dantavatra. And he sported for a little bit like he normally does with demons, but then he got bored of it, and he got so eager to go to Vrindavan, he couldn't fight anymore, so it just killed him. And he was very eager to go to Vrindavan. But then Vidaratra appeared, Dantavatra's younger brother, and challenged him. At that point, Krishna wasn't even willing to fight with demons anymore. He just instantly killed him. He told Vidaratra, let's go. So they went to the bank of the Jamuna, where they rested at Vishramghat for a short time. And then some brahmanas approached Krishna and composed prayers in glorification of his killing Dantavatra and Vidaratra. And Krishna wasn't interested in hearing that. He took the elder brahman aside and said, you know where my father's living now? And the brahman said, you know, since he left Kurukshetra with your assurance that you'd come back, he believed it, but his belief waned the whole way back. By the time he reached Mathura, he was completely depressed, and he couldn't even face his subjects at Nandagram without bringing you back. So he just stayed on the bank of the Jamuna, just watching the path, waiting for your return, in a lamentable condition. And then Krishna was so moved. But the Brahman said, but the landlord of that region, Maharaj Dana, a very magnanimous devotee, he was so inspired by Nanda Maharaj that he gave him his whole village and in his honor renamed it Gokulapati and posted his guards outside the village to watch the path so that at the first sight of Krishna in the distance, he would inform Nanda that he's coming. So then Krishna became very eager. And they crossed the Jamuna at a shallow place, and Krishna was blowing his conch shell, but it became so ecstatic he couldn't blow the conch shell. So the conch shell kept blowing itself, as does Krishna's flute, and he was too ecstatic. And he crossed over, and it's a long, beautiful story. But just to make it short, Krishna was very troubled when he returned to Gokul because he had promised the gopis that he would marry them. And he didn't know how to fulfill that promise because most of them were already married. So he couldn't sleep. He was just thinking, I got myself in a dilemma that doesn't appear to have any solution. So he couldn't sleep. And one night, Purnamasi approached him. He just walked right into his room with Mother Mangal. He said, Krishna, why don't you marry the gopis? He said, well, I promised that I would, but the problem is I already married. He said, well, that's no problem for you. Why don't you just kidnap them like you did Rukmini? He said, well, Rukmini was not married. And I had some place to take her. The gopis are married, and there's no place to take them because they won't leave Vrindavan. So then Purnamasi burst into tears. She said, I'm the cause of this whole dilemma. And Krishna said, what do you mean? He said, I created the illusion of the gopis marrying the cowherds, because if the gopis were not married, you know, their fathers only wanted them to marry you, and if they had married you, you would never would have been able to leave to go kill the demons in Mathura and Dwarka. So I had to arrange this illusion. It's like a dream that they all married. None of them married. They're completely pure and untouched. And Krishna said, well, it doesn't really help the situation any, because everybody believes they're married. So Krishna had faith that the potency of the Dham and Yoga Maya's mystic abilities could resolve the situation, so he just surrendered to the Dham in Purnamasi. So then Nanda and Yashoda approached Krishna, and they were also very disturbed since Krishna had returned. Because with Krishna's return, there was a challenge. It was more formidable than any demon that had ever attacked Vrindavan, Mathura, or Dwarka. And that threat was Daruka's chariot parked outside Nanda's palace, which was like a testimony that he can disappear at any time, just right away. So then Nanda and Yashoda approached Krishna, and they disturbed him. What is it you want? He said, we want you to stay in Vrindavan. He said, well, I will, I promise. He said, well, you know, you've done that before. We need something more than promises. We need action. We need you to take some action. He said, well, what do you want me to do? And then Nanda Maharaj just blurted out, bind yourself with the ropes of marriage, and then we'll have faith that you can't ever go anywhere. She said, if that's what you want, just tell me who to marry and I'll happily, humbly comply with your order. So then Nanda and Yashoda were very elated. And they went to Purnamasi and they said, well, you know, Krishna agreed to marry. So we were thinking that he should marry Danya in her camp, because they never married. They're the younger girls who performed the tapasya to please Katyayani to have Krishna as her husband. They're not married, so Krishna can marry them. Purnamasi said, that's all right. But what about Srimati Radhika? Nanda was shocked. What do you mean? She's already married. And Purnamasi said, not really. And then she explained how she made duplicates of all the gopis. The duplicates went and married. The prototypes didn't. And nobody in Brudge knew this whole dimension of her mystic potency. So she said, at the foot of the steps to Vishvabhanu's palace, make a big pavilion and call all the gopis to come and meet Krishna. So they did. And then Purnamasi came into the assembly and she said, there are many prominent gopis who are not present here. Where are they? Everybody's looking around. Everybody's here. No, they're not. So she asked some of the ladies to go to the homes of the gopis and go to the homes of all the gopis and see if you can find them. They're looking at each other. What is going on? And Purnamasi has got that typical Brijabasi mischievousness to her. She said, just go. Don't worry. So they went. And in a little while, they came back just completely astonished. You know, well, what's so surprising? So they're all these gopis are at home doing their household chores very diligently. So she said, well, go call them here. At this point, these ladies didn't know what was transpiring, and they didn't want to get involved, and they were very uneasy about the whole mystery. So Purnamasi said, I grant you my protection, go. So they went, called all those gopis, and they came. And the duplicate gopis looked at the prototype gopis, and they didn't know they had doubles. So they're like looking at each other, and everybody's looking at them. And then Purnamasi put all the prototypes next to the duplicates. So can anybody tell the difference? Nobody could tell the difference. Even the prototypes couldn't tell the difference. They didn't know if they were prototypes or archetypes or duplicates. Everybody was completely confused. So then, to make things really clear, Purnamasi sat down in meditation and evoked Vishnumaya with her eight-armed form that, you know, flew up into the sky and told Kamsa that, you know, you can't kill me. And she started moving around the assembly without her feet touching the ground. And she took all the duplicates, introduced them to the prototypes, and explained that, you know, I made these mirror images to get married so that Krishna could leave Vrindavan. Like, but the prototypes never married to remain eligible for Parakya Ras. So, she explained that, you know, these girls have never been touched by any other man, so they're only Christians, so make all the arrangements. So then everybody was quite happy, except for Srimati Radharani, who said that, I cannot enter into the household of Nanda Maharaj, because there will still be some stain from the past, because of the suspicion that shrouded my behavior and what people have said. And therefore, we have chosen to follow the path of Sita. And if we emerge from the fire, then let the doubts and suspicion of all disbelievers be thrown into the flames. Let them out of the dress. Everybody was appalled at such a proposal. And just then Durvasa Muni appeared on the scene. He started looking at everybody. He said, I've told you many times these gopis are pure and chaste and eligible to meet, to marry Krishna. But since the gopis themselves want to perform this pastime, I will facilitate and serve them in this way. So he took some hair from his head, threw it on the ground, and erupted a huge inferno. And Durvasa said, but be faithful that neither the inferno of a volcano or the sun or the apocalypse can even harm the gopis, because these flames will actually be cooling to their fire of separation, because these flames represent Krishna's loving embrace, which protects them in all circumstances. So with the holy name of Krishna on their lips, Srimati Radharani led the line of gopis into the inferno and came out the other side without so much as a thread of their cloth singed in the least. And all their detractors came up and apologized and begged their forgiveness. And the gopis just praised the good qualities of those who had criticized them so much. And then, as they prepared to depart for their in-laws' homes, King Vrishabhanu, with tears flowing from his eyes, took the hand of his daughter and placed it into Krishna's hand. He said, please protect her. Look here for her nicer. And they walked off to Nanda Maharaj's house. So, Krishna's pastimes are likened throughout the Bhagavatam, especially at the beginning of the 10th canto, as a boat in which we can cross over. Cross over what? The ocean of samsara. Beginning his narration of the 10th canto, Shukadeva Goswami encourages Maharaj Pariksit. So your grandfathers crossed over that ocean of Kurukshetra, implying the nature of the ocean as something that's filled with all kinds of dangerous entities and formidable challenges. He said the boat of Krishna's pastimes carried your grandfathers across that ocean when they reached the other shore successfully and victoriously. So, After hearing Krishna's instructions in Kurukshetra, Arjuna remembered those verses of Bhagavad Gita. But he never really took them as seriously as when Krishna departed this world with the Jadu dynasty. But he wouldn't let Arjuna or Daruka go. They had pastimes left to perform in this world. One of Arjuna's, Arjuna was actually just continually trying to commit suicide. He could not bear the separation from Krishna, but Daruka kept telling him, you have service. Which was mostly to bring the queens to Hastinapur. So when the queens crossed over to the mainland, and they felt the earth rumbling as if she was about to cast off one last great burden, an ominous cloud darkened the sky, crisscrossed with thunder and lightning. And understanding that Krishna has already left, and his Leela, whatever is left of his Leela, is winding down, with tears in their eyes, they turned into the rain and saw their abode of Dwarka just slip down under the sea. And when the boiling sea waters subsided, they were blinded by their tears in the rain, which is better, as Arjuna led them on to Hastinapur. And when a group of cowherd men emerged from the forest and mockingly abducted the queens, and Arjuna tried to string his Gandiva bow. He couldn't even string it. He called for his weapons, but for the first time they wouldn't come. He tried to invoke his divine missiles, and he couldn't remember the mantras. And those cowherd men mockingly dragged off the queens who were screaming and crying to Arjuna for protection. And then when Arjuna reached Hastinapur, his reputation had already preceded him and been broadcast throughout the universe that Arjuna has been defeated by a group of cowards. And he experienced at that point what we all experience at some point, that material life strips us of every last thread of dignity. And at that point, he took one of Krishna's instructions more than any to heart. I am not manifest to the foolish and intelligence of them, and covered by my curtain of yoga maya, and he resolved, I will go through that curtain. Because Krishna had promised the gopis of Kurukshetra that, you know, when they were chastising him for sending Uddhava to teach, you know, Gyan, he said, it wasn't Gyan. I wasn't implying you meditate on the super soul and receive his guidance. I was inferring that you realize the aprakat dimension of our relationship. So Arjuna understood this at Hastinapur. And he told his brothers, you will follow the footsteps of our forefathers. They immediately left the menorah, while Subhadra and Draupadi followed them in spirit. And as the Pandavas ascended higher into the Himalayas, where the air is so thin and the vegetation so sparse that there's no hope of maintaining life at that point, that's the path to take, to cross over. Then Arjuna's meditation shifted from, I'm not foolish, I'm not manifest to the foolish, to another verse. And that verse gave him solace and conviction and determination, and as it resounded in his heart, he was very enthusiastic to ascend those high peaks. And while remembering Krishna telling him, I promise you this, my friend, Sakya, believe me, he became so encouraged and enlivened that the stony path below his feet transformed into a marble pathway. And the jagged Himalaya peaks transformed into the golden domes of Apakatsuaka. And for just one instant before he was blinded by tears, he saw within one of those palaces his friend smiling. Remember? I told you. You will come to me. I promise, because you are my very dear friend. And in his eyes flooded with tears, and he crossed over. So today, their lordships are enjoying their swan boat ride in the newly renovated Radhakund. And although service and worship of Krishna is full of joy, we have to contemplate the meaning of Krishna's words, Krishna's pastimes. His lila, his instructions, is like a boat. And taking shelter in that boat, we can cross over and enter into that aprakat realm of Krishna's pastimes, in which there is no end. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
What is the difference between the prakat and aprakat leaders of Krishna?
Prakat is what is visibly manifest. Aprakat is like its image playing within the heart. And when you enter in more into the aprakat, then you lose track of what's the outer reality and the inner realization. And at that point, we're never separated from Krishna and his pastimes and his entourage. That's the inner meaning of Uddhava's message to the gopis, to always meditate on him. And they were chastising Uddhava and later Krishna that we don't want to be like, you know, the yogis and jnanis to meditate on Super Soul. But he told them at Kurukshetra, I didn't mean that. I meant meditate on the unmanifest pastimes in which I eternally interact with you by my bhava expansion within your hearts. And to that lila there is no end.
Does each devotee have a unique experience of the apricot lila in its fullness, like with all the paraphernalia and different devotees?
Yeah.
Or is it like some kind of...
There's one generic theme for each particular group and each particular dham, but there's unlimited variations to fit the individual's desires.
So when someone is experiencing the apricot lila, are they in Goloka Vrindavan because they're experiencing those lilas?
They're in it in their consciousness, which is the only way you can really be in Goloka Vrindavan. At some point the body has not followed, and at another point the body does follow by becoming spiritual.
So then does that mean like Goloka Vrindavan is multifaceted? Like for as many devotees as there is, there's that many Goloka Vrindavans?
Well, there's that many experiences of it. It's like when Krishna was at Kurukshetra, he was explaining the message he'd given to Uddhava. But they weren't satisfied with that either. They said, no, we want you to come back. He said, Nanda and Vishoda, they're dying without you. And Krishna is feeling himself drawn by the ropes of affection to Vrindavan. But then the conch shell blew and the Dharus, you know, Balaram and Subhadra were playfully narrating Krishna's pastimes. And they were calling him, it's time to come for supper. Krishna, come. The Jatas won't eat until you come. So he's disturbed. His meditation was broken. Srimati before him saying, come. They're dying. Nanda, Yashoda, the cows, they cannot live without you. And he closed his eyes, and he felt the breeze as he was running, and he heard the cows mooing, and even the leaves were all chanting, shh. And he felt, and that I'm home. I'm a carefree cowherd. At last. And the conch shell blows. And Balaram calls out, Krishna, the jatas are waiting at the supper table. They won't start until you come. And he's feeling very disturbed. Why did they break my meditation? And then he opens his eyes. They're dying. Gopal. And he closed his eyes. And his Subal told him, the cows are far ahead. We must catch them. And he's running. And he feels the breeze and the cool spray from the Jamuna and the birds and the cows and Subal, Sri Ram on his sides, and they're running and laughing, and they stop in the shade of a tree to take rest, and the conch shell blows again. Krishna, nobody can take prasadam until you come. And then when he opened his eyes that time, he realized he didn't have to go back to Vrindavan. He had never left.
The offering has not been made.
Oh.
They want to offer it to Radha Shyam. So they're just wondering how to do it. Put something on the boat, or should we take them off, or offer from the shore?
We could offer from the shore.
Okay.
Or it is... The best thing is if we can take a small plate out. I'll volunteer.
Okay, I'll tell.
Time to be offered.
How old is Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan?
15.
Always? In every pastime?
No, it varies for different pastimes and for different bhavas. But the standard is 15.
So
Radha is 14.
On earth? That's the only time that he actually goes from a baby and can experience those moves from babyhood all the way into Goloka.
That's the blessing of taking birth in the material world. Of course, you can hear about it and experience it in the spiritual world also.
What about devotees like Yashoda Mata?
You could probably put it right in front of them.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going swimming, and then later we go fishing.
Well, I don't know if the next year yet.
That comes.
You can try to get the big guy?
Yeah.
Okay, y'all can continue. I'll take the offer.
Go ahead. Hear ye, hear ye. Nitya is about to speak.
So, Maharaj is going to offer the boat to Radhe Shyam on their boat.
Srimati
Radharani ki. Jai. We'd like to... Express our appreciation for Vrishnamar and Soma for